Christmas.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes! Christmas came early in Philadelphia. Oh, so sweet. So sweet. You know why we hate Santa in Philadelphia? Because Santa never brought us a gift like this. Oh, so good. So good. Patrick and Pod Vader, we're not going to play you for a long time again, and you're not going to have a chance to redeem yourself. It's awesome! I think your team's falling apart, and you're going nowhere in the playoffs. Yep! Ramon, you got anything you want to say to these folks real quick before we start?
E-A-G-L-E-S, Eagles. That's all I need to say.
Love it. As you notice, this is Next Fan Up. We are the podcast for the fans, by the fans. I am Mark Sitko, your Sunday night host. I am the Eagles super fan, but I have another Eagles super fan with us tonight. You just heard her there. That is Ramona. Ramona runs a show called Sports Gal Pal. It's a bi-weekly show. Please sign up. Check it out. They do great work. Ramona is the host every single show. Thank you so much for joining us, Ramona. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. This is the best Sunday ever after the two lousy weeks with a zillion touchdowns against us. Oh, I feel so good. And again, we're going to talk about this, but I'm so glad Nick, the Kansas City superfan, is on tonight because he was on when I was with your guys a couple weeks ago when Pod Vader was talking all that smack against me because we're on the Blog Talk Radio League. Guess what, Pod Vader? Rue the day you talk smack about the sports gal pal and her fantasy team. That's all I got to say. You brought this on yourself. Suck it, Jay Soderbergh.
I love it. I love it. Thank you, Ramona. We have two other superfans with us tonight. Our Houston superfan, James, is here with us. How you doing, James?
Well, I'm doing pretty good despite the subpar effort by my team.
That's a tough game. Buffalo's obviously a formidable foe. I'm curious to hear what you thought of that game. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to introduce Nick, our superfan for the Chiefs. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing great. I am very happy to actually have watched a meaningful Kansas City-Oakland game again.
Yeah, seriously, that's amazing. Arch rivals for so long, and yeah, it is exciting once again. We're going to start off looking at the Thursday night game, Green Bay-Detroit. In this game, obviously, Green Bay pulled out a miraculous win at the very end of the game. I think if most people saw this game, there's not a lot to talk about other than the fact that if you didn't see it, at the very end, they were doing a hook and ladder play. Green Bay was down. They needed to score. They were doing a hook and ladder play, and there was a bad penalty call, a face mask, because it was crazy. They had pitched it back to Rodgers, and he was so far back, there was no one behind him to pitch it to. So all they had to do was tackle him. It was over. But instead, this guy got his hand a little too high. I think he did touch Rodgers' face mask, but he didn't grab it, and then he pulled him down by his shoulder pad. They got a penalty, 15 yards, and as we all know what happened next, with no time on the clock, one last play, he hucks it up. Rodgers throws a Hail Mary. They play it horribly. Detroit puts no one in front of the stack, and so there's just one Green Bay guy in front of everyone else, Rodgers, their actual tight end. He jumps up, makes the catch, wins the game. One of the craziest endings I've ever seen. I almost thought it was like karma because Rodgers wasn't able to pull off the comeback last week. It's like you can't stop Rodgers from coming back too many times in a row. Eventually, he will come back. That's what he does. He did it here. I'd love to open it up to you guys and hear what your thoughts are just on this idea of replay. Does this game make you think that we should be able to replay penalties and make sure that the penalty actually occurred? I don't know who might want to start, Nick, James, Ramona, if any of you guys have an opinion on that.
You said my name first. I'm going in.
Go for it.
What I don't understand is that we just, you know, because the argument comes down to is like, oh, well, if we have more replays, if we have more challenges, there'll be more stoppage, it'll slow everything down. But, like, this is 2015. There's no reason why the refs have to walk over and put their head into some big hooded device to watch a video replay. What I don't understand is why the refs don't have some sort of small tablet, like just hooked to their hip all the time. They could have the same angles that we're seeing fed to them immediately. Just go and just check their work, literally. You know, whenever there's anything that's a disputed call, if two refs see two different things, just like they just whip those things out and take a look. And, you know, I've heard the explanation from the league as well. Then you know, the reason why there is a hood is they don't want not necessarily show, have the transparency of like what exactly they're looking at and pointing at or whatever like that. Like, well, fine, have all of the broadcast cameras look at something else, show some cheerleaders or people in the fans or whatever while that's going on. But there's just, to me, it's just obvious with the technology, the video technology we have right now, the way that most fans are watching the game, we can see things a lot better than the refs can. And there's been just so many critical officiating errors. There's more than one solution for it. I mean, I would like more things opened up to challenges. And I think that they could actually do them quicker if they were to, you know, to put some innovations in there. But
I totally agree, Nick. I think it's the time thing really doesn't hold up this year because we've had so many times where the refs don't even know what's going on. And I've sat for 10 to 20 minutes while the refs try to figure out what's going on the field. It's like, is this really faster than if we did it, you know, through a computerized system? Like, no, the refs are already slowing the games down and ruining the sport for all of us. Yeah, they have no excuse in that regard. I totally agree. Nick, Ramona, do you guys have anything to add? I mean, James, Ramona, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I can see the point of more, recalls. And I like Nick's solution about the tablet. He's right there. But I mean, at the same time, it's like at some point, you know, the game's got to go on, and yeah, it's a questionable call. But really, the bigger concern for Detroit is the fact that you were up 20-0 going to the half. And then the second half, like, again, like Green Bay suddenly opened it up because you guys couldn't figure out the defense. I'm like, I just didn't know what happened. So that was the real story of the game. And yeah, the Hail Mary at the end was cool. But that's the real story, is that Detroit did exactly what happened, what they did. Green Bay did to Detroit what Detroit did to Atlanta the year before. And so I found that very ironic. And that's what I took from the game, to be honest with you. And the fact that Detroit is just so bad. I don't know why they still have that head coach. I'm not sure why he wasn't fired immediately on Friday. And again, this is what you get when you have an offense coordinator named Jim Bob Cooter. That's all I got to say.
No, I totally agree. Detroit has no excuse. I mean, it's not like if that penalty hadn't happened, they'd won the game. I don't really think that's part of the argument. There are times when a ref's call does cause the game to be lost or won, and I don't think this is a time. That was a bad call, and it gave them an extra chance, but Detroit should have still been able to close out that game. That loss is all on that team. I can't talk as much trash as you are just because of what happened on Thanksgiving, but I hear you. I agree. That is not a good team, and I love to throw salt in their face, but I mean, wow. And we almost let the Pats come back today. So I totally, you know, it's hard to make the
but we
to
didn't.
Be too harsh on that.
But we didn't. But we didn't. And there's a key. But we didn't. We finished the game. And, you know, yeah, notwithstanding, you know, Thanksgiving game and all, I get it. I don't know. I have a lot of theories as to why that happened. And there's not enough time in this podcast. But at the same time, you know, it goes back to, you had Rodgers on the ropes. You gave him too much room. And a quarterback of that caliber is going to figure out a way to win. And he did.
Totally. James, go ahead.
I was going to say, so I'm going to take the other side with the replay, and it's going to be kind of a devil's advocate argument. The whole reason replay was instituted in the first place was so that we could look back on either Monday morning or Tuesday morning and say, look at that, there were no refereeing controversies from the week before. We were able to go to replay, we were able to get it right. This year, last year, I mean, even with replay, all of the major headlines around, look at this blown call. So we can go one of two ways with replay. Either nothing is reviewable, or everything is reviewable. And once you make everything reviewable, you're able to break things down frame by frame. This is how we don't know what a catch is this year, because now you can go in there and instead of seeing just a nice fluid motion, you can drop down for every second of real life. You now have 24 frames to scrutinize and say, well, that ball rotated a quarter of a degree. I don't know if that's fully controlled. Oh, he's got 2 feet down and he kind of sort of turned. Is that a football move or is it not? So once you start opening up more and more things to replay, you have to get more and more granular with your definitions of what things are. And in the case of a catch, you're going to have things that fall into this gray area of it wasn't perfectly defined. So people are going to get aggravated at the result because you have to pick between, you know, two things that aren't perfectly well defined. So now you have like this face mask call or this non-face mask call. So now should all face mask calls be reviewed? Well, if a face mask call could be reviewed, why not an offensive holding call be reviewed? And once you start getting into all these judgment calls, you can easily hit this point where every single call could reasonably go to a replay. And what benefit are we getting from it? Because at the end of the day or the end of the week, we still have to go back and say, well, look at this blown call and look at this blown call. Now, the tablet idea, that would expedite things, but these referees also have to be on the field. They have to run and make the initial calls. And, you know, I have a hard enough time running with my smartphone, much less trying to carry like a little iPad with me and run along with a guy who can run a 4.440 and has a 20-yard lead on me.
No, I think it's a very valid point. Your point is very valid, James. And it's interesting looking at this particular play. I think anyone, including myself, watching it live, thought that was a face mask. His hand was definitely up there. His head jerked down. It looked like a face mask. And it wasn't until, like you said, you slowed it down and really got the granule level that you could see, oh, actually, he didn't grab the face mask. Roger just kind of turned his head down and he pulled him down by the shoulder pad. But yeah, great points. Moving on, Houston-Buffalo, James, for our first regular game for this weekend. What did you see in this game? I'm sorry you guys did not pull out the win, but how does Buffalo look? Do you think this would go differently if you played again?
I think it would go a little bit differently because we were, for the first time in a while, able to make a very good second half adjustment. You look at just the first quarter, the Bills amassed over 100 rushing yards in the first quarter alone, which is no real secret as to what the Houston Texans do poorly. They don't, you know, defend the run. That's why they went out and they signed Vince Wilfork. In the second half, we were able to clamp down a little bit, especially on the outside runs. We were able to solve the problem of being able to cover their receivers and clamp down on the outside runs. They tried to do that a little bit in the first half, and that's how Sammy Watkins got wide open for his big gainer. What's frustrating about Houston is that they're willing to do these, wildcat formations. We ran a lot more of that. And then you get down and let's see, Houston had punts from their own 47, the Buffalo 49, the Buffalo 44, and the Buffalo 45. It's when you're struggling to get things done on offense and you're punting from the opposition's territory, yet you're willing to direct snap to either running backs or wide receivers. I mean, why not, you know, run an offensive play and use a not even necessarily a high risk, but a high leverage position to try and go out and win the game or tie the game at that point. One of the good notes is DeAndre Hopkins set a franchise record with 10 touchdowns in a season. I had to look that up because I could have swore Andre Johnson had a 10 touchdown season once, but turns out that's not the case.
Wow.
Drops by Houston also plagued them, you know, as mediocre as Brian Hoyer has been. Houston leads the league in drops coming into this game. And on their last meaningful drive, they had two more on first down and second down that led to a long third down. And then, it's not a great situation outside of DeAndre Hopkins there. Alfred Blue got phased out of the running game, which is good. He's not a great running back, so it's good to see what we have in Jonathan Grimes and Chris Polk. And they're more of the one-cut runners that our offensive line is used to. And so they were able to get quite a bit done on the ground. And kind of another interesting stat that I didn't realize is Houston is has the second most offensive line combinations in the National Football League behind New England. So, we're at 500. We still have a very good shot at making the playoffs, especially with Indianapolis playing Pittsburgh tonight. I think that the game in Indy in a couple weeks here is going to be what decides who wins the AFC South. Houston's never won in Indianapolis. It'd be great to do that this year, but it's not looking great as of right now.
I think you guys have a solid chance. It'll be very interesting to see how it goes. There's a lot of games this week, this not being one of them, but moving on to San Francisco-Chicago, that came down to the very last minute. Ramona, you saw this game win in overtime for San Francisco, 26-20 over Chicago. What did you see?
Yeah, it was really surprising. I mean, the surprising thing was Robbie Gould, who is normally so clutch and so good and probably, you know, the best player the Bears have, and a UVA grad, go Hoos. Always like to put that in there. But he missed two field goals, which is so unlike him. And he missed the game-winning field goal, and then they went to overtime. And, you know, San Francisco figured out a way to win. What was interesting, too, is that, you know, again, I would have thought that the Bears would have built some confidence, particularly after that great Thanksgiving win at Green Bay, you know, to go in there on Brett Favre night and to take care of business and then to come back and then to really struggle against what is a very weak San Francisco team was really, really shocking. The Bears wasted a huge opportunity after Thompson returned the kickoff for 74 yards to the 28th. The Bears had, was at the 17 when they were called, Gould at that point, and he couldn't do it. So they had problems converting in the red zone. And I think they've had those those problems all season long. And until they get that fixed, it's not going to get any better. But I will say, and all of us can probably agree that what a difference a good coach makes, because that coach there right now is making Cutler actually look like a competent quarterback. And I didn't think that was possible. So it's like a Christmas miracle in that case. But good win for the 49ers.
Yeah, yeah, very impressive. I didn't expect them to pull that out. Awesome for them to go to Chicago and take that win. Nick, hey, you saw a game that was... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, going back to that kickoff return. I know that set Chicago up deep in San Francisco territory with less than 2 minutes to go. What do you think of them? They called four runs up the middle. Kadeem Carey got a 10-yard gain on 3rd and 10, but it looked like John Fox was just managing the game, trying to kill the clock, and ended up kicking attempting a shorter field goal, but it looked like he was perfectly happy settling for a 45-ish yard field goal with Robbie Gould having already missed one today. What are your guys' thoughts on a coach kind of playing for that versus trying for the end zone in that situation?
Again, if it's any other kicker, then I'd be like, what are you doing? But it's Robbie Gould, and he's normally, again, so good. I don't know what was up with him today. Maybe he's got an injury we don't know about. Maybe the age is finally getting to him. Who knows? But, you know, it is interesting whenever a coach is more conservative like that, particularly in game, you know, winning situations like that we always kind of question back and forth. It kind of goes back to McCarthy last year at that Seattle-Green Bay game where he was really conservative play calling and Seattle was able to come back. So, you know, you kind of wonder about these things. But I think that John Fox made the decisions he needed to make. And I was curious about him running because, I mean, they had so many plays that they could have. Because it's not like San Francisco's defense is that good where they couldn't have tried to go for the end zone. So who knows? You know, maybe it's a learning experience. I don't know. But stinks for the Bears. Great for 49ers, I guess.
What did you think, Nick? Did you have any thoughts on that? Would you have gone? What would you have done at the end there?
You know, I mean, this is going to come up in some of the other games. There was a lot of weird kicking decisions in this. Weird kicking occurrences, shall we say. I mean, both the decisions and strange performances by kickers. I think it's, you know, I'm really torn on it, and I think it's really situational. I tend to think that the coaches know their teams better and what to expect out of them, you know, given the tempo and the temperature of the game or whatever. But I also do think, and as we've talked about before on this show, there's a lot of situations where, you know, they just had some, like, you know, 14-year-old Madden whiz whispering in their ear. There's a lot of coaches that'd be a lot better at this game.
I agree. I want to sign up for that job, Nick. Cincinnati, Cleveland. Cincinnati won 37-3. Obviously, a blowout. Cincinnati's a far better team. Was there anything interesting to take out of that ass whooping?
Do I really have to talk about this game, Sitko?
You don't have all to. Right. That's all we need to say.
Just say what I said. Just say what okay. I said and move on.
I think the one perspective that would be interesting looking at this game is if we all expected the opposite to happen. So here's what we got. We had little-known player A.J. Green had 5 receptions for 128 yards and a touchdown in this dominant performance. Future Hall of Fame quarterback Austin Davis for the Browns did not play particularly well, ended with a QBR of 14.5, stunning everyone. The Cleveland Browns' vaunted rushing attack amassed only 68 yards, averaging 3.6 per carry, and sadly, this proud dynastic franchise dropped another one to go 2-10.
Nice,
best recap ever.
We will move on now to Baltimore, Miami. James, you had a chance to check out this game. Miami pulls that out in the end, but this is one of those that was down to the wire, and you know, lead changes throughout. What did you think of the game?
Oh, I mean, down to the wire really oversells how exciting this game was. Miami won the game. And they only had 8 first downs. So we'll go with some fun stats. Matt Schaub, this may not come as news, but he threw a pick six. This is his 3rd straight game with a pick six. He has 7 straight games where he's attempted at least one pass with an interception going back to 2013. In fact, there was one game last year. He only played in 2 games last year. He went 0-for-1 in one game with a pick, and in the other game, he threw a pick six. So I think it's pretty safe to say that Matt Schaub has bottomed out as far as where he's going to go as a quarterback. The other fun thing, I mean, Baltimore is just playing stupid, stupid defense. Miami scores a touchdown. Then they miss the extra point, but they get another chance because Baltimore is offside. And the second time they tried the same point after, Baltimore blocks the kick. Oh, but they were offsides again. So now Miami, realizing that kicking is probably not their strong point, gives the ball to Jay Ajayi, and he gets the two-point conversion. I guess, the good thing for Miami, their new offensive coordinator looks recommitted to what Dan Campbell recommitted to a couple weeks ago with the running game. They rushed the ball 14 times in the first half alone, 26 overall. But outside of that, it wasn't a great game. Tucker missed a 55-yard field goal to go up at the end of the game. Baltimore's lost all – or has been in – all their games have come down to one possession. I have yet to find another team that has played all 16 games in a regular season that have all been decided by one possession, so I'm really rooting for that.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. That's interesting. When you say, James, they got that offsides, could they apply the offsides penalty to the – so you're going to kick, you get an offsides penalty. Can you then get half the distance to the goal for the two-point conversion off of that?
Yes, that's ultimately what they took after the second offside. That's what they elected for. You can get half.
So they have like a half yard or a yard to go.
Yeah. So I mean, once you basically get the penalty on the kick, you can apply it and go for two from half the distance. Or if the kick is good, then you can apply it on the ensuing kickoff.
I see. Oh, trip. You were saying, that he bottomed out and threw a pick six. You know what other quarterback bottomed out and threw a pick six today? Tom Brady did that. Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, he did.
Nice, like 95-yard touchdown for us. Oh, so sweet. Oh. Love it. Ramona, another person who's celebrating that play. Seattle versus Minnesota, another blowout game, but I think far more surprising. I think a lot of people thought Minnesota might be able to, with their defense that is supposed to be amazing, to be able to beat Seattle. That did not happen. What did you see in this game?
Well, I only saw the first half of it, and Fox actually cut away from this game in my local market to go to the San Francisco Chicago game because they said that we wanted to show you something more competitive. So that's how bad the game was. When Fox is willingly going, no, we want to show you something else, that's when they know, okay, we need to watch something else. Here's the stat that's the scariest thing. So with Adrian Peterson, one of the best running backs probably of all time at this point, I think none of you guys would disagree with me, they only had 31 rushing yards the entire game. I had to double check that before I said that on air. No, that's not possible. From NFL.com itself, Adrian Peterson only had 18 rushing yards, only 8 attempts. There's the game. That's what happened. I mean, it's incredible. I feel really bad for fantasy owners. If you had Adrian Peterson today, I'm so, so sorry for you. So sorry. And that's it. I mean, when you look at it, passing yards, Seattle had 260 passing yards versus 94, 170 rushing yards versus 31. I mean, they both lost a turnover, but third down percentage, Seattle was able to convert 70% of third downs and Minnesota only 20. There's the difference. Legion of Boom came to play.
Yeah, incredible.
The game was,
go ahead.
I was going to say, the game was even more lopsided on third down than that. At one point, Seattle was 9-for-10 on third down conversions. There were some very baffling coaches' decisions on here. One of them was the end of the half. Seattle actually blocked a punt from Minnesota. There was only 4 seconds left, and it's similar to what the Patriots did last week. Why don't you just snap the ball to Teddy and have him throw the ball as far as he can down the one sideline? It's going to eat up the 4 seconds. Seattle almost got to run a play from about the 50-yard line because when the ball went out of bounds, it sort of looked like there may have been a second left. You can throw the ball deep downfield even if you take the intentional grounding. It's an offensive penalty, and you don't get a free down after that. And then Pete Carroll decided to challenge a 3rd-and-1 versus a 1st-and-10 on his own 12-yard line. He lost the challenge. And why this is so weird is they were up 7-0 at the time. It's 7 minutes and 30 seconds left. And at the time, Seattle was averaging over 6 yards per play on offense. Why are you trying to challenge a 3rd-and-1 to try and get a 1st-and-10? And if you want to go the whole expected points metric route, even if he had won the challenge, he only would have added 0.01 expected points on that drive. So just it ended up not mattering either way, but two very weird coaching decisions there. going back to the whole need for a 14-year-old that knows how to play Madden and, you know, act as a consultant.
For sure. Do we all think that Seattle is going to go to the playoffs now at this point? Do we think they are clearly one of the wild cards? And then do we also think they're a formidable team in the playoffs? I mean, how is everybody thinking about this? How does Seattle look to all of you?
They're not going to get past Arizona or Carolina if Carolina and Arizona keep playing the way they are. They're just not. They don't have the personnel. Unless, now, here's the thing. If Marshawn comes back, Beast Mode comes back healthy, they could make a decent run. But Arizona and Carolina are playing so, so good. I mean, so good. I just don't see them getting past either one of those teams.
Yeah, and their secondary is still questionable. Minnesota can't take advantage of that, but I think Seattle's the Legion of Boom is not what it was. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this game was – I think Seattle's a good team, and I think, you know, just the way they've been playing, the way that they do play, they give themselves a chance to beat anybody just because they are going to be physical, and they, you know, they have different things, different strengths that are quite acute and that going for them. But I think this game was really more about exposing the limitations of Minnesota. They really go as Adrian Peterson goes. I think Teddy has really been sort of exposed in these last few games, where if he doesn't have a running game to lean on, he's also, you know, conservative to a fault. He, you know, they just can't get things moving with him. And his ceiling may be, he may be, you know, a new Christian Ponder, Matt Castle to the league. I mean, I hope that's not the case, because I've liked a lot of what he's done and what the Vikings have done this year. But I think against a real contending team, and they can't get the run going, they just totally fold.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a great point.
Seattle represents a... I think Seattle represents a clear second tier in the NFC. Like, there's Carolina and Arizona at 1A, 1B. Then there's Seattle at 2, and then there's basically – you can make an argument for everybody else being a step below Seattle. I would not want to play them in the wild card round. And if Carolina makes a bunch of mistakes like they did against New Orleans today, Seattle won't let them off the hook like New Orleans did.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very true. I don't think that the Eagles are going to make the playoffs, but if some weird miracle we take the NFC East, the one wild card team I don't want to see is Seattle. That would be very, you know, I think they could easily come in and beat us to then move on to go up to the big teams. New York Jets, New York Giants, another game that came down to the very end. Fitzpatrick proving he can win a game, this kind of a game, which was very impressive. I don't think the Giants' defense is much to get past, but he pulled it off. Nick, you saw this game. What did you think?
Yeah, this was a very entertaining game. You know, Fitzpatrick, the Amish rifle, he's a sniper. And the Jets were really getting beaten pretty badly in the first half of this game. They couldn't protect Fitzpatrick. The Giants' defense looked way better than I expected them to. And really, the Jets were shooting themselves in the foot so much, I'm surprised they still have feet. I mean, it was kind of amazing how many third down stops they had that they then gave up with penalties. It was dozens. And, I mean, you look at Todd Bowles on the sidelines. I mean, he literally looked like he was just sitting there thinking through his head, like, which one of his players he wanted to murder first at halftime. but, you know, and for a long time, this was 20-10. And the Jets started fighting their way back into it with a lot of good passes. I think what this also sort of showed, what was interesting about this game is that, that, you know, in the same way that sort of, you know, Minnesota very much sort of goes the way that, that Adrian Peterson goes, the Giants are just so Odell Beckham Jr. reliant, and they basically don't have other receivers. And so I don't really know what the Jets were able to do specifically to neutralize him in the second half. But if he's not catching balls, then the Giants just can't move the ball. And what a lot of this really came down to was, you know, we were talking about these, you know, do you kick it or do you not kick it sort of conundrums. Well, this game sort of turned on these two fourth and goal situations for the Giants. Both, they were within the five, I think. And the first one, they decided to kick it. And I was surprised by that. I'm generally one of those people with all things being equal. Like, you know, if you're like fourth and goal with only a few yards, just go for it. Cause even if you don't get it, at least you're pushing the other team back so far. And if you can trust your defense a bit, then you're going to get the ball back with good position anyway, or maybe even get a safety, who knows. But it's clear that they had zero faith in their own power running game, and they were getting stuffed on every play. And so they kicked the field goal the first time. The second time, again, it's like fourth and two. You know, they were on like the two or three, and they decided to go for it. And And so my general philosophy is I was critical of their first decision and I was thinking like, okay, yeah, it's smart to go for it. And then Eli throws an awful interception that gets returned for 20-something yards. And that basically was the spark that led to the Jets being able to tie it up towards the end. And so they tied it up at the end of the game. And just, I mean, that was basically it. The Jets then got the ball in overtime. They drove down, they kicked a field goal. The Giants got the ball back and missed a field goal. Game over. And so it's like, you know, you can look back at this game and it's like, you know, and so should they have kicked the field goal the second time? You know, again, I don't know.
Yes. Madden says yes. That 14-year-old Madden player says that they had it backwards. Early in the game, you can go for it because there's still time to make up, you know. But late in that game, when you're up by 10 and you have a chance to go up by 13, I get it. Going up by 14 is or going up by 17 is way better from the game. But going up by 13, you would have forced the Jets to get two touchdowns, which I don't think they were capable of. They barely were able to get the field goal and the touchdown. And then in overtime, they too couldn't punch it in from on the 5. So I think Coughlin made the turn there, and I think the 14-year-old Madden player would disagree. Would disagree with Coughlin as well. Interesting. I thought JPP had his best game. I thought JPP looked very good. He blocked a couple passes, looked very strong. ODB is incredible, but I want to point out we were arguing on Slack this week if ODB is the best receiver in the league. I don't think he is. Clearly, by the game today, he proved he's not. He's definitely a top 5, maybe a top 3, but when a top receiver in the league on 3rd and 2 doesn't kick the ball after they don't catch it and get a delay of game penalty, that's some rookie crap. And that should have cost them the game. They're very lucky Eli then threw for 7 yards and they got it. But if that should have been the end. You have a 3rd and 2 and you kicked it, so now it's 3rd and 7. Horrible, horrible play by a dumb, dumb player. He's incredible, don't get me wrong. But that's the difference between, like, when we talk about great receivers, like Jerry Rice doesn't do that. Jerry Rice would have never done that. The fact that he loses his cool is not good. And I mean, just like last week when they make comebacks and he makes a touchdown and he's celebrating like he's already won the game. And it's like, no, you're still down by a touchdown. Oh, you don't win the game and you lose. So that whole, what was it all celebrating about? We celebrate when we're winning. We don't celebrate ODB when we're coming back and we're just halfway there. But that's my own 2 cents. Obviously, I'm highly biased. Any other thoughts on the Jets and Giants before we move on?
It's always good when the Giants lose. That's celebration right there. Just always, always good.
For sure. And they're in real trouble. We're now tied with them. If they don't get 2 games up on us, which they now I don't think will, and we beat them the last week of the game of the season, we're taking the division from them if they're the division leaders. We play the Redskins before that. We'll see. But I think this was a big loss for the Giants today. They clearly don't want the division, and we'll take it if they don't want it. Arizona-St. Louis, another blowout game. Nick, I'm so sorry that you had all the blowouts, although you have a good game coming up in a second. What did you think of this game? Was there anything interesting to pull out of this? Yeah, obviously, just once again, is Arizona just great and we need to respect that?
Stunning the world, the lowly Arizona Cardinals beat the great St. Louis Rams. The future Hall of Famer, Nick Foles, who is competing with Austin Davis at the top of Mount Olympus, only completed 42% of his passes, QBR of 8.9. Right, 15 of 35. Yeah, and the Cardinals looked good. I mean, they treated this like the business trip that it was. It's amazing thinking back that the Rams actually beat the Cardinals in Arizona earlier this year. I mean, it just seems like that must have been 4 seasons ago. But no, Palmer, you know, had another really good game, 26 of 40, 356 yards, 2 touchdowns. And basically, both Josh Brown and Michael Floyd had over 100 yards receiving. This was just, you know, it was a route. St. Louis really only had one good play, which was a good girly run for 34 yards. And the rest was all just was Cardinals highlights and a good time. It looked like a really lopsided rage quit Madden game.
I'm very excited to see. I hope it goes down that we get Arizona versus Carolina in the playoffs. Obviously, these two teams are very, very, very strong, and it would be great to see that. Ramona, you looked at another game, 2 playoff teams. Was there something else there?
I was going to say, this is kind of how Carson Palmer gets in the MVP conversation. Like, we've talked about Cam but we know what Arizona is without Carson Palmer. Look at the last 5 or 6 weeks of last season when they're struggling to score, you know, 10, 14 points a game. Now they're able to put up 27 on what's considered a good defense. I think Carson Palmer is being overlooked for MVP.
No, I think it's a great point. I mean, is it better to dominate people or is it better to make your last minute comeback? It's like the Eli Manning argument. Everyone's always like, Eli Manning is amazing. And you're like, yeah, he gets a lot of stats when his team is down and he's throwing a lot of passes trying to catch up. And yeah, he's had a lot of fourth quarter wins, including two big ones in Super Bowls. But wouldn't it have just been better if he just dominated those teams? And I think that's a good argument there between Cam and Carson Palmer. Carson seems to handle business better than Cam, but I think if you're in trouble, maybe you want Cam more. I don't know. It's Carson doesn't get in that situation nearly as often that he needs to bail the team out at the end. But that's a great argument.
Yeah, but Carson has way more offensive weapons than Cam does right now in Carolina, and there could be a difference there too. So I feel like Cam is working with a lot less than Carson has.
So Carson also is old. But I hear you.
Okay, so am I. Old man football. Jameis already has a Heisman, so you know he doesn't need anything else. No, I think honestly, if Cam doesn't get it this year, the way that you know they've played so well, I would be really disappointed. I mean, again, I love Arizona. I'm on that bandwagon. I'm all for, you know, I'm cool with Arizona going to Super Bowl or Carolina going to Super Bowl representing the NFC, but. I just am partial to Cam. I don't know.
I'm just curious who these better weapons are for Carson Palmer. He's got the nearly retired husk of Larry Fitzgerald, who's had to reinvent himself as a wide receiver. Somebody named John Brown. Somebody else on the team named Jay Brown, or first initial J followed by Brown. I can't be bothered to look that up. And then they just lost their starting running back. They lost their backup running back in Andre Ellington to begin, or their big play running back in Andre Ellington. They're relying on somebody named David Johnson. I mean, it's like Madden generated the names on this team, and that's who he has.
Cam Newton has made Funchess look like a functional football player. That's the difference. Cam Newton has made Funchess look like a functional football player. Outside of Greg Olsen, who does he have? I mean, Funchess? Come on.
And the running. But Funchess was at least. Cam has one of the best running games. But I hear you. He doesn't have many people.
Cam is Superman. He's Superman. Therefore, Cam is Superman. So listen to me. I sound like Jimmy Six right now.
I know. Seriously. You watched the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game. Speaking of that division, Ramona,
I actually did not watch it, but Tim is texting me right now his thoughts, as he is your super fan. As many awesome. People know, Tim and I are very good friends outside of the Gal Pal Next Fan Up universe. But I asked him, I was like, do you have any thoughts? I'm on your podcast right now. Any thoughts on the game? He goes, none that are appropriate. I'm like, no, come on, give me something. He goes, still can't tackle. Matt Ryan makes huge, big mistakes. Freeman back is huge. And then he goes, no idea what's wrong in the red zone. And I'm like, yeah, but Freeman only had 49 rush yards. He goes, yeah, but he's good in pass protection. I'm like, oh my God, really? That's an Atlanta Falcons fan for you when they're like, but no, he's good at pass protection. Talk about, again, several of my guests on my show have talked about this on my podcast. We got catfished by Matt Ryan. He looked like a competent quarterback like the first five games. And then I don't know what happened. Maybe the home life isn't good. Maybe someone hurt his feelings. I don't get it. But man, he's just been awful, just terrible. And Jameis Winston, I mean, just a comeback. He's starting to look really, really good. Some signs of that he is a competent NFL-ready quarterback. And that's not always the case of rookies, particularly rookies that are as highly vaulted as he is. We've seen so many number ones kind of crash and burn. And Jameis Winston is not my favorite for many, many reasons. Anybody who's seen a certain CNN documentary would absolutely agree with me. But, you know, looking at Ryan, I mean, you know, he did throw for 269 yards. But other than that, I mean, I'm looking at just the box score and it's just not good. And again, I'm going to say it again. Julio Jones is wasted on that team, wasted on that team. Like, imagine if he were on Arizona or Carolina, how much better those teams would be. Wasted, Tim. Get rid of Julio. Give Julio to someone else, Tim. Let him go. Let him be free to be a better wideout somewhere else.
Oh, I love it. Matty Ice becomes Matty Puddles. Poor buddy.
That's fantastic. I'm texting Tim that later.
Jacksonville, Tennessee. This game was way higher scoring than I was expecting. James, you checked this game out. It had a bunch of lead changes, and it looked like Jacksonville might pull it out at the end. What did you see?
So the first thing that I saw was if you go and request this game at the bar, you have to do it multiple times, and then the bartender comes over and says, "Are you serious? You want this game? I thought you were kidding."
That's great.
Turns out I wasn't kidding, and then they ended up shutting it off anyway in the second half because of San Francisco and Chicago. But in what I did see, the Titans have now they broke an 11-game losing streak at home. They're now they've wanted 1-11 in their last 12 home games. If you're curious who their previous home win was against, it was also against the Jacksonville Jaguars. <Of course. laughs> not to rag too much on the Tennessee Titans, but why not? Let's keep it up. Marcus Mariota was the first 100-yard rusher for Tennessee since Chris Johnson in 2013.
Oh, my God.
Most of that was on an 87-yard touchdown run that looked absolutely great. He had great downfield blocking from his wide receivers. So, you know, it can't be too bad. Maybe I don't understand why they can't, you know, they have David Cobb, why they can't get him involved. He's a big rookie prospect that they've said multiple bad things about after drafting. The fourth quarter had 41 total points, which is incredible. Blake Bortles still looks like a second-year quarterback. He had a snap go over his head that the Titans ended up grabbing, and it was the first play from kickoff after Tennessee had just scored a touchdown, so there was a big 14-point swing there. It turned out to be a very entertaining game if you weren't looking at the fact that it was Tennessee and Jacksonville.
Yes. Oh, I love that bar story, James. That is amazing. Nick, you had a chance. You were saying earlier you finally got to watch a Chiefs-Oakland game that was meaningful. You were able to pull out the win. What did you think of this game?
This was also a really entertaining game. And not just because it now means that the Chiefs have beaten all of their division rivals away. We beat them all in their houses, which feels really good and fun for smack talk purposes. But basically, I mean, the Chiefs were trailing for a good portion of this game, and it's largely because the first half of the game was defined by the Chiefs' mistakes, while the second half of the game was really defined by Raiders' mistakes. Both Jeremy Maclin and Kelsey had fumbles in the first half, which was really tight back and forth. And I would probably end up like ragging on Kelsey for about a minute about that, his particularly bad fumble, if we had lost the game. But I can move on to other things. That it was a fun game because each team scored on their opening possession, and then the defenses clearly adjusted and totally locked each other down. I thought both the Oakland defense played really well up front. Their front seven I totally underestimated. But what's interesting is that, you know, the Chiefs, their defense has been very, very dependent upon the pass rush. And Justin Houston didn't play in this game. I hope he'll be back next week. But so they, you know, the Chiefs were in a position where they had to start really manufacturing pass rush again. And Oakland has protected their quarterback better than I think any other team in the league. I think they had the least sacks in the league going into this game. And what the Chiefs sort of discovered is that, you know, the biggest knock against Carr coming into this league was that he did not perform well against the blitz. And other teams had blitzed him and tried to shake him so far this season, and he usually played pretty well because his protection always held up. And he, you know, he made a lot of veteran throws. He was throwing away the ball, all that kind of stuff throughout the season. I've been very impressed with him. But what the Chiefs figured out is that, you know, he can still be rattled, and once he's rattled, he will make those mistakes. And so the whole second half, the Chiefs were going just totally all in on blitzes. They were rushing 5, 6, 7 players on every single play. And they weren't even getting to Carr most of the time, but it forced him into some bad throws. And he ended up throwing 3 interceptions, which I think he only had 3 going into this game. And that's really what turned around the game for the Chiefs. It was back and forth. What was crazy was, so, I mean, part of what made it crazy when we're talking about kickers is that, so, you know, it's at some point it was, you know, it was 7-7, then it was 14 all, and then the Raiders got another touchdown, and, you know, Sebastian Janikowski, Seabass, who's like the all-time greatest kicker of the league, missed the PAT. And like, whoa, okay, well, now if the Chiefs get a touchdown, we can just take the lead with just with the point after. And so we take the lead, we get up to 20 points, and we miss the PAT. And then there was a third missed PAT in the game. And then the Raiders, you know, when we were up 26-20, the Raiders moved downfield and they moved to kick a field goal. There was this great, crazy piece of broadcast tape, because apparently, so our rookie cornerback, Marcus Peters, he's from the Oakland area, and apparently he was extremely nervous playing in front of his home crowd and his parents and things like that. And I think he was dehydrated too, because he was cramping up. But anyway, so, and he made some play. And so they show Seabass kicking this field goal, which bounced, it bongs off of the upright. It was like, so he'd already missed, you know, a PAT, he then missed a field goal, and they immediately cut away to Marcus Peters, just because they're showing like, oh, and he made a play, and Marcus Peters, like, right as the camera comes on, him vomits. And so it was like this like strange, like, theater of the absurd, like, you know, moment of broadcast where it's like, and the kick is bong, and then Marcus Peters blah, like, whoa, what is going on in this game? And you know, I was listening to the Chiefs radio call of it, like, while watching it on TV, and just like having Chiefs like radio, and you know, we have one really good announcer, and one guy is Len Dawson, who's like a legendary quarterback for the Chiefs in the 60s, which means he's like in his 80s now. And he, every now and then, he kind of pulls a Harry Carey and I think forgets he's on the air. And the amount of time I heard him use the Lord's name in vain during this broadcast was, you know, worth it for itself. Well, what it really came down to is the Chiefs didn't even, you know, their big resurgence had really been about their running game coming back and the offensive line coming together. The offensive line has now gotten a bunch of injuries, and they looked, they were really struggling in this game. There wasn't much of a running game, but Alex Smith has put on now another very, very impressive performance. He had another two touchdowns and was very efficient. And, you know, the thing I used to always think about Smith was, you know, it was always that he wasn't going to make any big, you know, usually wasn't going to make any big interceptions, no big mistakes that are going to kill you, but he's also not going to save you. If nothing else is working, you go to him. I always think of him as like Rorschach in The Watchmen. He's like, you know, Chiefs fans will look up and say, save us. And I'll whisper, no, that was Alex Smith. But that's not Alex Smith anymore. And late in this game, basically, you know, was still locked up. I think the Chiefs got another touchdown and basically, oh, no, yeah. So when it was 26-20, I was chatting with Monty, the Raiders super fan, and basically said, like, you know, there's still a chance we just get like one touchdown and the point after, which is important at this point, then we take the lead. It's like, yeah, or you'll throw the pick six that will seal it for us. And two plays later, pick six, Chiefs win. I didn't realize I had those kind of powers, but apparently I do. And that's what's really important here.
You're a Jedi Knight. That's awesome, man. It's good to find out. Yeah. That's a great win, man. I thought it was a great game. I mean, Oakland, obviously, you guys are both still in the hunt. Awesome to win that game out. James, you took a look at the Denver-San Diego game. San Diego was obviously shooting for that first pick in the draft.
With the first pick in the NFL draft.
What did you think of this game? How is Denver looking? How is Osweiler the beast? What did you think?
Well, San Diego is definitely on pace for that first overall pick, and their performance today kind of reflected that. The Denver team behind their savior, Brock, they look competent. It reminded me a lot of that Chicago Bears team that went to the Super Bowl nearly a decade ago, where they're not asking their quarterback to do too terribly much. They had 39 rushing attempts as opposed to just over 20 pass attempts. The defense there is the real story. They forced two fumbles, recovered one of them, and had a pick six. San Diego never really got anything going. They got a field goal, but, I mean, even that was kind of generous. 17-3 final score kind of undersells how far apart these two teams are.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's one of those games, obviously, they took their foot off the gas. I don't think they wanted to just blow them out, but they probably could have. But interesting to see where Denver is going to go with Brock. It's very fascinating if they're ever going to bring Peyton back. I'm excited to see. We'll see what comes up in the near future. Philadelphia, New England. Obviously, I watched this game. This was, like I said, Christmas early. Very, very good game for us. No one expected Philly to win this game. We've given up 45 points in two consecutive games to teams that are far less impressive than Brady and the Pats. I think the big story here, two things. One is Brady clearly without Gronk and without enough weapons. Pod and Patrick love to brag about this. You can't sack Brady because he gets the ball out in 2 seconds and it's impossible to touch him. Well, the Bills showed a couple of weeks ago and we showed you can hit him a bunch of times if he doesn't have anyone to throw the ball to. We would just cover everybody. He'd go back. He'd panic and we'd slam him. And I'm really worried if he doesn't get Gronk back or even with Gronk, our defense isn't good. If you have a good defense and you just take Gronk away at this point, I don't think he can do much. I don't know. For them to lose to us today, I lost a lot of respect for the Pats. And not respect. I mean, they're a great organization and everything. Belichick's one of the best coaches ever. Brady's amazing. But I thought they were going to be a contender this year, and I think watching this game today, I did not see a contender. I don't think they're anywhere near on the level of an Arizona or a Carolina. I don't even think Denver will see Pittsburgh, some of these other teams. But I think they're going to have a tough time in the playoffs if they play like they played today. I do have to still point out, though, the Eagles' offense and defense is not good. And if we had gone just straight up offense versus defense, I think the Pats would have won this game. But we had some great special teams play. We blocked a punt at the end of the first half and ran it in for a touchdown. We ran a kickback. Sproles ran a kickback. And we also had an incredibly long pick six, which I think is very – you could never predict that. I mean, he caught the ball inside the five and ran it back all the way for a touchdown. Malcolm Jenkins, incredible play. But yes, I thought it was fascinating to watch as Belichick did not have the weapons. He was reaching. We always talk about Chip Kelly being this gadgety, gimmicky plays. Oh, no. Watch this game. You want to see weird, stupid plays? Belichick was doing all kinds of silly crap just trying to generate an offense because they had nothing. So they're doing weird, like, handoffs that were strange. At one point, they faked. This was like high school ball. They faked that Brady was confused and was walking off to talk to Belichick, and then they hiked the ball to somebody else and threw one of the best passes of the day to Brady, who ran down the field untouched. But, I mean, when you're doing that kind of stuff, when you're relying on trick, stupid plays that aren't real football, and you're relying on onside kicks, they were just dominated. That's how pathetic the Pats were today. Total domination by a team that is shitty and below 500. That's dangerous and that's crazy. Two losses in a row. Pats haven't done that since the beginning of the 2013 season. I think it's just, I mean, I'm saying this facetiously, but I think this is the kind of analysis I see across the NFL all the time. I think what's clear here is Chip Kelly's a better coach than Belichick and Bradford's better than Brady, right? I mean, that's totally clear. This is the kind of analysis I see all the time. I mean, in a Bradford-Brady game, Bradford wins. That's clear what happens. If these two quarterbacks go against each other, Bradford comes out on top because he's the man. But awesome. And also, I think that the biggest thing here, my last thing I'll say before I hand over to Ramona to hear her celebrations, is that Chip Kelly saved his job today, and Bradford should stick around as the quarterback. Clearly, this slide that we just had was because Bradford was out and Sanchez is horrible. So clearly, Bradford should stick around. I'm not saying he's the quarterback of the future. You can bring somebody in to challenge him, but Bradford should not go anywhere. They need to find a way to sign him. And Chip Kelly definitely, as I've said all along, should not go anywhere. He is fine. He's a decent coach. He outsmarted Belichick today. He should stick around. That was an amazing, amazing win for us. Ramona, what else do you have to add to that?
First, you sound very Skip Bayless of your analysis of Brady versus Bradford. Well done. I didn't think that was possible for you for many reasons. Wow. Slow your roll there on the Chip Kelly love. I'm still not buying it. USC, I don't know what you offered him. Offer him more and get him over there. Release my team from his crazy mad scientist. He's like the great and powerful Oz. We're peeking behind the curtain. It's a wee small little man because he turned DeMarco Murray into a man who just doesn't run anymore. It's just sad. It's so sad. But yes, I'm thrilled with the win. The win did not happen because of Chip Kelly. No, it happened because your fearless leader, the Pod Vader, again, karma, 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 karma. I'm going to say it again and again. Go back, gang, and listen to like the last, what was it, Nick? Like the last 10 minutes of that episode where I was on a couple weeks ago where he was talking all that smack. It's his fault. And Nick even said, Nick, did you not say that he brought that on himself?
Oh, I was trying to walk him back because I knew what he was doing to himself. I could see the dark powers arising around him. And I was like, dude, for your own good, just shut up now. Just cut it off. Like you've made your point. Now you're sentencing Brady to, you know, 1,000 broken mirrors and ankles or something. You know,
not only that, but he's lost like 2 weeks in a row and like disastrously in the Blog Talk Radio League. like really, really badly, like embarrassingly bad. Notice he hasn't been bringing up the Blog Talk Radio League the past couple weeks. Noticed. Nice. So there you go, Jay. There you go. Now, I know he's not on here tonight because he is probably celebrating Hanukkah, and happy Hanukkah to everyone who is celebrating it. It's a beautiful ceremony and a beautiful festival of lights. Have at it. I believe that, you know, again, it's Christmas early, like Sticko said. It's been a great weekend for Sports Gal Pal Land. So many good things, but this just topped it off. And here's the other thing, and then I'll let you guys go. We all stay on the podcast, obviously, but I am wearing my Deshaun Jackson jersey that my evil brother-in-law, who's a Patriots fan, an obnoxious Patriots fan, a masshole, if you will, bought for me one Christmas because he refused to buy a Shady McCoy one because he said, I want to give you a crappy player that I know will be traded. And literally the next season, he was traded. So, ha, Brian, suck it. All you stupid Patriots fans with your whole, like, we're so awesome, and his balls weren't flat. They were flat. You know it. You're cheaters. This is for Spygate. This is for Philadelphia. We have Rocky. We rule. Ha.
Awesome. I love it. There's one more game we have to get to tonight. And oh, and I just want to say, you guys are off on Pod. Pod's been very nice to me as a Pats fan. He's never talked smack. Patrick, this one's for me. Oh, Patrick, 4 more years, buddy, until you guys play us again. You're never going to hear the end of this. Your team is trash. Tom Brady picked 6. How many interceptions did Tom Brady throw today? Yeah, that's right, Patrick. Love it. Suck it. That's just usual.
Patrick, I had nothing to do with that. I feel very fondly of you, Patrick. Patrick, I feel very fondly of you, Patrick. Patrick, I feel very fondly of you. So, see, it's equal time. It's equal time with the super fans. Totally. Equal time.
We spread the love and hate. Totally. Ramona, the last game we looked at for this weekend, we had Cam and his win over New Orleans, 41-38. What did you think of this game? I know you think that he is the MVP. What else did you see in the game?
It was such a good game. So in my local area, I was not able to watch the Philadelphia-New England game. I was with Carolina-New Orleans, which I was originally fine with because I'm like, I didn't want to see the loss. Well, they didn't lose. So I was watching all the tweets and the Bleacher Reports and everything else coming through. And I had friends like tweeting me. I'm like, stop it. But Indianapolis, Carolina was another one of those kind of nail biters. And here's the interesting thing. Cam was out a couple plays. He had to go through the concussion protocol. He got back into the game, which I'm kind of like, he got his bell rung quite a bit and then he was kind of limping a little bit. So that looked really interesting. But yeah, I feel like New Orleans, it's a very interesting team just because, again, they finally got rid of Rob Ryan. No one should hire Rob Ryan. Please, dear God. I love Buddy Ryan. I think he's tremendous. His children are evil and should be vanquished from football because they bring nothing but no value to football anywhere. Just know. But, you know, their defense actually looked really good. They were able to stop Carolina a few times, but it was a shootout. Like, lots of points scored. Back and forth, and Carolina just showed again how mobile Cam Newton is. There were several times he was running out of the pocket and finding plays and finding guys, and him and Greg Olsen, that's just a great pairing. Like, he really knows how to use that tight end really well. Funchess had a couple of good, I believe he had a touchdown. There was a couple bad penalty calls. I mean, that's life. So, you know, a lot of pass interference plays too, a lot of grabbing, and there was some kind of, but again, it's a rivalry because they're divisional rivals, but New Orleans, again, pulled out the win. They're still perfect. I think, though, honestly, it would be good for Carolina to lose at some point. They need to lose now because you don't want to be like a Patriots and get all the way to the end and then flop. You know, I don't know if this team can actually go all the way and win because, I mean, looking at their schedule, I have been a big pro of the Carolina. Love the Carolina. But, you know, who have they really beaten of quality? I mean, really. So that's the other thing I'm kind of curious about as we're hoping that they're going to be in with Arizona in that NFC final. So that'll be interesting, but great game. Breeze looked really good. Again, I wish Breeze had more offensive weapons. Mark Ingram looked also really, really good. So, I mean, it was a good game, entertaining game, but I don't see anybody in that division really challenging Carolina at this point.
No, totally. I think they've run away with it. They are dominant. I'm excited to see what they do in the playoffs. Nobody saw them being the team that they are this year. Very impressive, Carolina. Definitely one of the coolest stories of the season. Indianapolis and Pittsburgh is playing right now. Pitt is up by six. Pitt has six and Indy has three. So they're up by three at the moment. We'll see how that goes tonight. You know, obviously, by the time this plays, it'll be irrelevant. Tomorrow night, we have Dallas versus Washington. We're going to close this episode with a super battle. We don't have a super fan for Washington. So if you're a Washington fan, a Redskins fan, please write in. We'd love to pick you up as a super fan. We do have a Dallas super fan, Brian. He's one of our best super fans. He did a super paddle just by himself. So it's a solo super battle that we're going to play as we end here. But as we wrap up, I just want to thank you guys, Nick, James, Ramona. Thank you guys for being on the show. For everybody that wants to follow Ramona, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter @SportsGalPal. And of course, I'm on Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/SportsGalPal. My shows typically come out Mondays and Thursdays, just like the guys here. But again, mine's more of an interview based show. So it's a lot of fun. We talk about why people are crazy about sports, different sports things. And every once in a while, your favorite super fans come on. Like, for example, Christmas, I will have two of the super fans, hopefully, depending on their schedules, come up. So it's like a little family reunion. So yay.
Cool. And we got to get James on there, too, so that James can become an official super fan through that,
christening. That's right. He's not an official super fan until he gets through the Sports Gal Pod gauntlet. I mean, that's just only fair. Am I right, boys?
I hear. Yeah, totally. Indeed. It's you'll be there. You'll love it, James. It's going to be awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ramon. I really appreciate it. It's always fun.
Thanks for letting me have on.
The Eagles fans. Of course, of course. You can follow us at NFU Podcast. That is Next Fan Up on Twitter @NFU Podcast. You can follow us there. On Facebook, if you just type in Next Fan Up, you'll find us there. We have another show coming up on Thursday, the week four preview. Pod Vader, Jay Soderberg hosts that show. It should be really fun. There's only like 4 weeks left, folks, so let's dig in and really enjoy football. For a lot of us that aren't going to possibly make the playoffs, it ends very soon. But we still have two more months. The show has been really fun so far. Thank you for all of our followers. We really appreciate it. If you can go onto iTunes or however you take in your podcasts and rate us, make comments, please reach out to us. We love input. We'd love to hear from you. We're always looking for super fans. So if you've not heard a team super fan in a while, please reach out. We would love to make you a super fan, put you on the show once a month or so, have you write in weekly about what you think your team is doing and not doing. That would be awesome. We're going to make a big push towards the end of the season to get us locked in with new super fans for the next year, because the off season is a great time to be a super fan. We do mock drafts. We have great discussions about free agency. The guys are all really knowledgeable and a great group of dudes. Please join us if you can. And with that, we are off.
What is going on, Next Fan Up Nation? I am Brian, your Cowboys super fan, here to talk a little Monday Night Football as the 3-8 Dallas Cowboys travel to Washington to take on the 5-6 and first place Washington Redskins. Amazing as it may seem, the Washington Redskins are in first place, something I'm sure none of us were thinking of when the season started. But here we are, and here I am to battle nobody. We still do not have a Washington Redskins super fan. Skins fans, I know you're out there. It's time to come out of your holes. It's time to gloat. Your team is number one in the NFC East. We want to hear from you. So if you're interested in being the Washington Redskins super fan, get in touch with us. We're on Twitter @NFU Podcast. You can find us on Facebook @NextFanUp. And you can always hit us up on Gmail, nextfanup@gmail.com. Send in your resume if you want to be the Washington Redskins super fan. I want to battle someone in week 17. Hopefully in a game that matters still to the Dallas Cowboys. We'll see if it does. But going into week 13, again, at Washington, I'm a little concerned about this matchup, obviously. We are out Tony Romo, gone for the season, officially, kind of. Didn't put him on IR. We're still banking on playoffs, of all things.
Playoffs?
Yeah, that's right, Jim. We still think we have a shot. And amazingly, if the Cowboys win this game, and things break right this weekend, we'll only be one game out of first place. I find that so hard to believe, whereas we haven't won a game in 9 games without Tony Romo. We won't have him the rest of the regular season. There are 52 other guys on this roster, and consider this a challenge to them. You guys are getting paid to put up plays, to make things happen on the field. We want to rely on Tony. I get it. but we need you to step up. Our O-line has been a little disappointing recently. Tyron Smith, I'm looking at you. You're getting beat in ways I never thought I'd see you get beat. And now you've got a matchup with a pretty decent Washington pass rush, Ryan Kerrigan especially. For Washington, it's real simple. I've been surprised. I thought they would be stout against the run and weak against the pass like they were last year, but it's kind of been a flip. Washington's much improved against the pass, 13th in the league, but 27th in the league, giving up over 126 yards a game. Darren McFadden the last 2 months has been hit or miss for Dallas. We need a big hit from him this game. He has to carry the load offensively. I just don't trust Matt Cassel. I don't trust him going down the field making smart plays. I prefer him going down the field to what we were doing with Brandon Whedon, who was captain checkdown, but Cassel goes down the field, you don't know what you're going to get. You might need Dez to save him on a 18-yard Hail Mary. It has to be Darren McFadden. It has to be this running game. We have to eat up yards on the ground, dominate time of possession, get back to what we were supposed to do coming into this season, Romo or no Romo. On the other side of the ball for Washington, look, Kirk Cousins, say what you want, he's getting the job done, especially at home. Washington has won 5 straight at home, and Cousins is making the plays. Do I like that? Not necessarily, but he's doing what needs to be done. He's showing that he was the best quarterback for this offense. Personally, I am terrified of DeSean Jackson in this game. Now, we get Morris Claiborne coming back, but he's going to be a little gimpy dealing with hamstring and ankle issues. Going up against DeSean Jackson on the outside, yeah, we're going to put some safety help over top, moving Byron Jones back there to the position we want to see him at. But I can see DeSean Jackson absolutely getting behind our defense for 1 or 2 huge plays, and that's all he needs to change the game. It's going to be tough for us to contain him. The best defense, or the best defense against that, really is a pass rush, which has been non-existent for Dallas for most of the season. Greg Hardy, when he came back from suspension, especially that New England game, was putting a ton of pressure on opposing quarterbacks. He's disappeared the last few weeks. And a lot of the talk in Dallas is he worth the trouble anymore? Now, you won't see Jerry cut him and admit a mistake right now, but we have to see something these next couple weeks from Greg Hardy and really the entire defensive front. I've been extremely disappointed in Tyrone Crawford and DeMarcus Lawrence especially. These guys were, you know, Tyrone Crawford got the big money contract, and we were expecting big things from him. You know, I was talking him up for a Pro Bowl berth, and he has all but disappeared. DeMarcus Lawrence, again, he was injured last year. We had to deal with that. He's come back this year and just been just underwhelming. This is the best word I can come up with. So we need them in the backfield. We need to put some pressure on Kirk Cousins, force him to make some mistakes, which he is prone to do. Otherwise, it could be a long game. I don't expect this to be a high-scoring game necessarily. These are two of the more putrid offenses in the league. But for Dallas, you got to show up, fellas. You have to show up in this game. And can we please stop all this talk? Stop all this talk of Dallas tanking it for the rest of the season. I'm sorry. You still have a chance to make the playoffs. And tanking in the NFL is not what tanking in the NBA is. A draft pick between, you know, 3 and 12, to me, I don't care. I want to see this team go out, put forth the effort, and get a win. I'm tired of this this tanking talk. As the great philosopher Herman Edwards once said,
"Hello, you play to win the game."
Yeah, get with it there, Herman. We got a show to run. Let's go, buddy. But yeah, absolutely, you play to win the game. I want to see an effort from Dallas this week. I want them to get this done. Do I think they can? No, I don't. Like I said, Dallas has lost 9 straight without Tony Romo, and I refuse to pick them until they get one done without him. I'm afraid it's going to come down to the fourth quarter again. Whether it's the offense or the defense on the field, doesn't matter. Someone's going to have to make a play, and when that play is out there to be made, we have not made it without Tony Romo. As much as I hate to do it, I do think Washington wins this week. 20-17 is going to be the score I give. Like I said, a late defensive stop that we don't get, a first down that we can't get. That's just how I see this one going. And when Washington wins this game, that will officially be the nail in the coffin for the Dallas Cowboys 2015 season. It's amazing at 3-8 that we still have hope, but this is going to be it. And, you know, Washington, I really think after this weekend, first place on their own in the NFC East, again, amazing to think about how this season has turned, but Philly is a shell of themselves. You can ask our Philly super fan, Mark Sicko, about that. And you never know what you're going to get out of the Giants week to week. So I really expect coming out of this week, Washington wins, Washington sitting at 6-6, and Washington sitting in first place in the NFC East. God help us all.